I'm so tangy, people call me my tangy. God is a word, bitches, I'ma keep it banging. Truth is like a rotten tooth, you gotta spit it out. Let the bottom two, let my wisdom work it out. Big on the underground, can't knock me down. Wicked lean bitches, bad bite up your man.
Good morning and welcome to the Community Living Show here on CITR 101.9 and the NCRA Radio Networks. Michael Rubin today opening up. Kelly should be here shortly. He said he was feeling a little bit under the weather, so we'll get started with the theme song.
When the road looks rough ahead and you're miles and miles from your nice warm bed, you just remember what your old past said. Boy, you got a friend in me. Yeah, you got a friend in me. You got a friend in me.
And good morning again, back here on the NCRA Networks with the Community Living Show.
Hi, and everybody.
Kelly just made it.
Yeah.
So what's going on?
I'm not feeling under the weather. It's probably what happened to the convention on Monday night. It's probably what it is.
That's right. Your candidate won, right?
No.
Oh?
No.
Did not win?
Did not win. Scott Andrews came in third place.
Ah.
So, yeah, and of course, the NDP riding was also on third place as well. So, there you go.
Well, you know.
This is probably the Trudeau fever.
Yeah. Well, Surrey picked up Diane Watts, of course.
Of course.
Conservative. But we talked about that a couple of days ahead of that, and he said, well, that's probably what's going to happen because she was mayor for so many years there and so very well loved.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I was glad to see about the huge voter turnout, though.
Yeah, and especially the advanced polls as well.
Yeah.
During Thanksgiving weekend.
So everybody out there should give themselves a big pat on the back for that one.
Mm-hmm.
Just getting out there to vote is
step. Well, at least Stephen Harper's out, so that's the main thing.
I can't find it again. I wanted to save this video, but the very next day, Tuesday, Justin Trudeau was found in the Montreal subway just shaking hands and just saying,
being a politician as usual.
He was all gleeful that he actually got into office. So, well, the only thing I had to say is, Justin, let's see what you got to do, and hopefully you'll bring some new tools and some real change to the table.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So, since I didn't really have anything new, I was going to just replay a interview that we have done in the past.
Okay.
With Teresa de Grobat.
Mm-hmm.
Since we've played the interview the first time, she's had her book launch and she's been really successful with it. So she's selling a lot of books. So
Before we go, just want to let listeners know that next Thursday and Friday is the hour special on both CITR and Co-op Radio. Both, of course, Co-op Radio is going to be doing their pledge day. Of course, they start tomorrow on Co-op Radio. Of course, we, as a community living, we're going to be doing an hour special on the program, and we're going to be talking about correctional schools and Woodlands facility and all sorts, the designated homes for the schools. So that's next week on the program.
Yeah, is Gennarji O'Sullivan's helping you with that, right?
She's helping with that because she knows a little bit of the residential schools in the area.
She's been a huge advocate for truth and reconciliation and things like that. And well, then what about Richard?
I tried getting Richard, but on the day that I tried to get him on, he wasn't, I wouldn't say he wasn't feeling well, but he wasn't sleeping very well, just to let listeners know. But I'm hoping that I do maybe do a part two on the residential schools and stuff, so Richard will know what was happening in Woodlands. Instead, I put in Peter Bourne, who is totally blind, but he kind of recognized, kind of knew about what was the situation with the Woodlands school as well. So I'm hoping.
Yeah, well, they were both there at different times, was it, or at the same time?
I really don't know. My guess is probably they were both at the same time.
Yeah.
But I didn't ask Peter or Richard for that, so
yeah.
So that's the question. Just, there. So yeah.
So it's something we can find out later on.
Sure. Yep. And then of course our pledge and on Co-op Radio, and of course if they tune into the Co-op Radio, they get a CD from Peter Bourne, the CD. Yeah. So then when they make the pledge, so those are the. That's what's happening with next week's show. So,
yeah,
stay tuned.
Yeah, please do tune in for that. That it's going to be a wonderful special, really informative, and maybe hopefully we'll be able to report on how things have changed. Also,
so absolutely.
So yeah.
So I am out of here. I'll leave you to the stuff. All right.
Okay, so we'll play Teresa's interview and
all right.
Feel better.
Hopefully,
see you
I'll
next
feel
week, maybe.
I'm
well,
we'll
have to be. You're running the special next week.
Absolutely. So just let listeners know about that. All right.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Here's the play.
All right. And we're here today with Teresa de Grosbois. And Teresa teaches business and marketing courses and heads an international evolutionary business council. That's tough to say. She works with speakers, influencers dedicated to teaching principles of success. Teresa believes it is possible to create a massive positive change in the thinking of our planet, one word of mouth epidemic at a time. I have to agree with you on the one word of mouth epidemic. That's pretty awesome. That's quite the undertaking that you have going on with that. So with that mouthful, is there anything else that you want to add to that, Teresa? And welcome to the show.
Just that it's great to be here, Michael. Thank you for having me on your show.
It's a pleasure to have somebody who wants to inspire people the way that you actually do.
Thank you.
So you've also often been described as someone who teaches thought leaders and emerging thought leaders to a greater impact on the world. So tell me how you got to that.
Oh, I love that question. You know, like a lot of people, it was a bit messy, is what I want to say. You know, I had what I would now affectionately call a really bad year about 12, 13 years ago. And, you know, in the first 6 months of that year, I had my marriage had ended, my father had passed away, my business had failed, and my health was in a spiral. And I actually, you know, remember at the time, the only thing I was really, really clear on was how incredibly unhappy I was. And in fact, if I look back over the, you know, preceding 25 years of my life, I couldn't actually look back at a time and say that I could point to that I was really on fire happy. You know, I had all the outward trappings of success, great job, six-figure income, beautiful house, nice car. But it just, what, you know, my life wasn't really lighting me up, you know. And I actually remember there was a moment when I'm sitting on the bathroom floor of my post-marriage breakup new condo, you know, and I'm surrounded by tools because I've always been a renovator, and this bathroom's going to be my latest project. And there's literally tears streaming down my face because, you know, the only thought in my head is that it's me that needs renovating. It's me. And it was one of those amazing moments because I made the commitment right then, right there, I'm going to be my next project. And I started doing every self-help course under the sun. I went back and did a whole certificate in mediation because I've always been a conflict avoider. Mm-hmm. And I just started leaning in to changing my life until I really figured out what really does light me up is actually teaching what I'm really good at, go figure, and helping others that would change the world become more influential.
Wow. So how long did it take you to actually get around all that, especially knowing that you got to renovate yourself or coming to the realization that you need to renovate yourself?
You know, I love that because a lot of people think it's, you know, poof and it's done. and although life can be magic, it's, you know, the magic isn't always instantaneous, you know. And I had been introduced to the whole concept that a lot of transformational leaders talk about, which is like lean in. You know, Janet Atwood talks about this in her book, The Passion Test, just lean in the direction of things you love. So when I first really stepped into the realm of, you know, and now for something completely different, I decided that I was going to create a charity to build schools in Africa. I was going to take my hobby of writing children's books and publish 3 of them to raise money for the charity. And the interesting thing that happened when I did that was, you know, I really quickly learned 2 things. The first was that I didn't really like being a children's author. Go figure, right? And the second was that, you know, I had people coming at me in droves saying, 3 bestsellers in 8 months. Holy cow, Teresa, how did you do that? And I ended up, you know, I started mentoring all these people and, you know, how do you get more influence and more reach? You know, until one day I had, you know, my very dear friend, who's actually now my best friend, Shawn DePerrin, she's also an international level speaker. You know, she was sitting having tea with me one day and she said, you know, Teresa, you know that fish don't know what water is. And I'm thinking, yeah, okay, I get that cliche. You know, a lot of us don't get what we're really good at and what's all around us. She says, the universe is sending you a flood of people who want your help. Don't you think you should pay attention to that? And it was like a light bulb moment because it was like, here was the business that I should be creating, teaching people who want to do good work in the world how to become more influential. Mm-hmm. And it was so intuitive and so natural and normal to me that I, you know, like fish don't get the water is, I wasn't seeing where my gifts lay. And when I shifted and rebranded overnight, all of a sudden, you know, my life really lit on fire and my business just took off and I've never looked back.
So your success was like a light bulb coming on?
A little bit, yeah. And, yeah. You know, success is sloppy, you know, and I think one of the most important things anyone can learn in life is to give yourself permission to succeed sloppily. You know, if we wait till everything lines up all neat and perfect and looks pretty with a bow tied on top of it, we'll never really do anything. And in fact, it's in those getting messy moments and trying stuff, even though it might fail or even though it might be a little awkward in how you bring it forward. Mm-hmm. It's those moments that are actually the really joyful, wonderful, amazing moments of life.
Well, don't you have time after you know, you realize what it is that you have, what the talents are and how the talents can be used to help bring value to the world, can't you clean it up after you discovered it?
Exactly.
even you after know, all like, the mess?
You know, you want to build a house, there's going to be a little sawdust involved, right?
Exactly.
But that doesn't mean that there isn't going to be a mansion at the end of that process, right? And so you know, I just think so many of us are hardwired to resist stuff until we feel really ready to do it, or until we feel, you know, the world is waiting. Really, truthfully, the number one thing that stops most people from becoming more influential is their inner dialogue, that they're not worthy, they're not ready, they're not smart enough, they're not influential enough, they don't have enough credentials. Inner dialogue will trip you up every time. And, you know, transformational leaders all over the world are talking about this. I know you talk about this on your show a lot, Michael.
Yes.
And often what's stopping you from really making a difference and being of service in the world is that inner dialogue that you're hardwired with. That's one of the reasons I wrote my book, was because I wanted good people to see that sometimes you're your own worst enemy, and you could be of much higher service to the world if you would just stop listening to all your negative inner dialogue.
So when you talk about your book, you mean the one that's coming out October 1st? The Mass Influence?
Mass Influence, The Habits of the Highly Influential.
Tell us a little bit about the book.
Well, you know, I really wrote this book because I see so many good people who really want to do wonderful, positive things in the world get tripped up the minute that they try and increase their own influence, you know. And when you look at highly influential people, it really is a lot like a game, you know. It's really a skill set, a set of habits that you can learn that will really serve you. But the challenge is that most of us have, you know, well, we have two things that stop us from becoming more influential. The first thing that stops us is we all learned an etiquette or a rule book in kindergarten about fairness and, you know, I do this for you, you do that for me. And, you know, we learned a similar rule book when we first started networking in business. You know, you're my colleague. I want to do business with you, therefore I would offer to buy you a coffee, for example. And you know, we all know intuitively, you know, that if you met Oprah Winfrey and offered to buy her a coffee, her gatekeepers would get in the way faster than you could say restraining order, right? And yet most of us don't get where that rule book changed. The highly influential operate with a different set of habits and etiquette in their life. And so that's the first thing that stops a lot of good people from gaining more influence. The second thing is that a lot of us are really hardwired with a lot of negative self-talk that that really gets in our way of stepping into the influence game.
Yeah, that is true. A lot of people are, just our society in general is like, they are them and we are us. And there's like a railroad track that you can't cross, right?
Yeah, that's a great analogy, because it's, you know, a lot of people really do think that way. And, you know, the reality is when good people stop themselves from seeking influence because they've got all this inner dialogue going on, you know, the only people who aren't hardwired with inner dialogue that stops them from wanting to seek influence is sociopaths. You know, sociopaths are often hardwired to want more influence. And, you know, that's not the world I want my grandkids to grow up in. I don't want my grandkids growing up in a world run by sociopaths. I want good people with strong values who really believe in changing the world for the good to be seeking influence and having the ability to create that change, because really that's the world we all want to live in.
Right. So is that the basic why to creating a book about this topic?
You know, I think it was one of my most fundamental whys, you know, because a lot of people don't realize how much they can step into thought leadership, you know, and I mean, you know, a lot of people are batting around this term thought leadership, but, you know, if you're pushing out new ideas and new thinking or wanting to initiate change in some way, then you are in the realm of thought leadership, right? And that, it can be a scary place to be, because the minute that you're leading, nobody else tells you the way to go, right? You're the one that's got to make it up and figure it out. And, you know, so thought leaders, and, you know, most business owners fall into this realm, but a lot of people in business do as well. You know, you might just wanting to be creating positive change in your organization or your community, or maybe you run a not-for-profit. And if you are not feeling that you have the right to step forward and create positive change. If you're feeling no one will take you seriously, if you're feeling you don't have enough credentials, if you're, you know, any form of inner dialogue. And, you know, the great irony is we all invented it when we were very young. You know,
And we need to take a quick break here for station ID. You're listening to the Community Living Radio on the NCRA networks here live at CITR 101.9 FM here in Vancouver.
Right, most people invent their dominant inner dialogue when they're like 2-3 years old, first getting language, and you know, it's those first few failures you had in life, right? Mm-hmm. I can actually remember the day I first invented my inner dialogue, and you know, am really clear how it trips me up now as an adult.
Well, because I run into this all the time, where that first inner dialogue wasn't necessarily from within, it was something that was handed to you.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Was yours handed to you, or did you discover it on your own?
Well, you know, it's interesting, because it's sort of like it's handed to you, and then at the same time, it's what did you make that mean, right? And, you know, like what you wouldn't know about me if you didn't ask is, you know, I'm from the Canadian equivalent of the backwoods, right? Like I, you know, I'm not only Canadian, but I grew up in the north, right? And you know, my family used to spend their summers in a remote backwoods cabin. We'd, you know, we'd go in every year just in time to see the little baby mosquitoes hatching. And, you know, and so one fall we're back from the cabin and, you know, I'm the youngest of nine. So all my eight siblings are sitting around the kitchen in our tiny little, you know, we have a 100-year-old house and all my cousins are visiting and everybody's buzzing with excitement. Because my grandmother's taken us all to the movies, which is a big freaking deal because, well, first of all, it's the love bug. So that's a pretty big deal right there. And, you know, secondly, we never go to the movies. It's just way too much hassle for a family our size. And I look across the room just in time to hear my mother say, "Teresa can't go. She's too little." And so I make that mean. I'm too small to play with the big kids. And that inner dialogue sticks. So I, you know, as of that point, I start spending all my time doing one of two things, either desperately trying to prove that I'm not too small to play with the big kids or terrified that I am. Now, do you think that might get in the way as an international speaker who's got to step out on a stage in front of 500 or 1,000 people, right? And the reality is, though, that, you know, your inner dialogue is neither good nor bad. It just motivates you, right? Mm-hmm. It can trip you up, but it also can motivate you to do some really cool things in life. I'm too small to play with the big kids actually motivated me to become an expert on influence that wants to invest in emerging thought leaders. How cool is that, right? So, you know, a really great exercise, if you don't mind me giving your listeners a takeaway, if you want a takeaway from the call.
Oh, takeaways are awesome. I actually encourage them.
Okay, great. Well, here's your first takeaway. I'm giving you guys homework. For the next week, journal what you notice about your dominant inner dialogue, especially when you think about doing something that to you would have a lot of importance to it. Like if you think about really stepping out and playing a bigger game in life, maybe you change something within your organization, or maybe you, you know, set up that not-for-profit organization you've always been thinking about. What's that inner dialogue that confronts you? And start journaling about that, because that was invented by a very young version of you. And when you can really start to see where that hinders you, but also where it helps you, then you can come to peace with that inner dialogue and have it stop running the show. It then just becomes, you know, a messaging that runs in the background, but you don't need to actually engage in it or be motivated by it anymore.
So the topic of the book. Why do you think that this particular topic is so important now?
Oh, I love that question. Well, and I know I'm preaching to the converted when I talk to the, you know, people and that are listening on your show, but you know, I really do believe that we're living at a point in history that we will look back on as the most significant shift in humanity that mankind has ever seen, which is we are in the era right now where people are waking up and they're realizing that they can control their own lives, they can control their own destiny by learning to notice and control their own thoughts. How cool is that? Right? And when we get that very simple skill to notice how we think, notice what we make things mean, and not let our thoughts run the show, but we start running our thoughts instead of our thoughts start running us, then all of a sudden, the world around us changes. We have the opportunity to pursue the life of our dreams. We have the opportunity to go after promotions or bigger opportunities or, you know, actually create positive change in the world. And so, you know, for me, this book is just one contribution, a small but important one, to really helping that shift happen on this planet, because this book invests in the average grassroots person who wants to create some positive change around them so that they really get how simple and easy it can be. And, you know, by easy, I don't mean it wouldn't take work, but just like fish don't get what water is, most people don't get that influence is all around us. Learning to be influential really is as simple as riding a bike or as simple as learning to breathe. Once you get the basic habits of it, it really does become something that you will start to look at and wonder how you ever thought it was hard.
Yeah. And being an influencer does have a lot of its own moments because it creates so much abundance around you, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, influence, you know, there's just one fundamental principle to influence, and it's so easy that people laugh when I tell them, you know, and if you don't mind, I'll just give it to you.
Yeah.
It's, you know, just like we gotta give respect to get respect, you gotta give influence to get influence. And a lot of people kind of go, huh, what the heck does that mean? Right? But when you become someone who habitually starts giving influence to other people, and that's, you know, one of the most major habits of influential people that you'll see, is, you know, influence starts flowing back to you. Right? You know, consider the scenario that if I was at a networking function and I stood up on a chair and said, look at me, I'm so great. I'm a 4-time best-selling author. I speak all over the world. I even like pie. You know, people would be rolling their eyes back in their head and going, get that crazy Canadian out of here, you know? And at the same time, if I stood up on a chair and said, oh, everybody, Michael Rubin just came in the room. He has this awesome radio show and he's, you know, really a cause for positive change in the world. He, you know, shines a light on all these really cool people and highlights them on his show. And, you know, all of a sudden in that scenario, I'm gracious and you're more influential. And the interesting thing is in that act of giving influence, you know, I become more influential. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, it's got to be authentic. You know, because I can hear your listeners saying, you know, but what if you really don't like the person? Well, if you really don't like the person, don't say anything. But, you know, if you routinely go around and gift influence to people who in your mind deserve it, you know, like Michael, I would come on your show any day of the week. I love the work you do.
Thank you.
You know, it's very grassroots and it's, you know, it really does celebrate awesome people who are doing cool things in the world. You know, so for me, you know, I would clear my schedule to come on this show because I so love what you do. But, you know, there are interviews I turn down in a month just because I don't resonate with who the host is and what they're doing. And I want to be able to authentically be on their show and have fun with them and enjoy it, right? you know, so the first thing to understand around giving influence to get influence is that you always do it in alignment with who you are and what you believe. You never seek to build relationship or give influence to someone you don't authentically love and admire.
Yeah. There's one thing that I try to get through with a lot of people that is the idea of, when you said alignment and values and things like that, is getting people to understand what it is that they believe so that they align themselves with other people that have that belief, so that everything is in alignment. And that's when things really start to light up, is when everybody's authentic around each other and you kept bringing that authenticity up. So it becomes really important. Can you explain a little bit more why authenticity? Okay, we'll try that again. Authenticity is so important.
Yeah, you know, and I love how you talk about this, Michael, because I couldn't agree more. It's authenticity is becoming such a common buzzword these days. Everybody's talking about it, and there's a lot of different definitions out there of it. Well, here's my definition. Authenticity is your inside voice saying the same thing as your outer voice, right? So, you know, if inwardly you're saying, oh God, I really need this sale, and outwardly you're saying, this is a really great product, you should buy it, you know, we all know that lands smarmy, right? And at the same time, when you're meeting influential people, you know, you can tell when someone runs up to an influential person and says, here's a copy of my book, I'd love for you to have it, when really what their inside is saying is, I really want you to endorse this. There's an inauthenticity there, right? Mm-hmm. And so inside playing the influence game, you got to really get noticing where your inside voice is saying something different than your outside voice. Because just like you can tell when other people aren't in alignment, they can tell when you're not, right? Right. And influence, or being in influential situations, connecting with influential people, has a tendency to make us nervous. You know, it presses those buttons where we get a little bit in our heads worrying about how we're coming across, or, you know, or maybe we've had that networking course that, you know, get out there and ask, always be closing, right? Maybe we've got that running in the back of our heads. And so people show up and do a lot of weird things when they meet influential people, and it creates an issue for authenticity. So you just want to make sure that you're watching what you're doing from a standpoint of, are you meeting people you really love? Are you doing something you really love? Are you, you know, asking when you shouldn't be asking, because there's a desperation going on that, you know, is running in the background. All of those things can create inauthenticities, and so it's really important to start noticing them.
Yeah, and you're right. You really can tell when somebody's just desperate to sell something, or if they're, again, authentically trying to just simply share value that they have. And sharing is way more important than I think selling. So a lot of good points on that. Yeah. So a lot of this is about building relationships. And you discuss with authenticity, you discuss one mistake that people make. How many other mistakes do, and what are some of the biggest mistakes that people make when building relationships with influencers?
Yeah, I think the biggest I would see is the one I would affectionately call the premature ask, you know, and people always look at me and say, the premature what? But the premature ask is like the equivalent of, you know, you just meet the new neighbor and the new neighbor comes over and says, wow, I love that lawnmower you have out front. I can't wait to borrow that baby, right? And and people do this to influencers all the time, right? Like you'll see it at big networking functions. You know, usually the most influential person in the room is the guest speaker or the person on stage. Mm-hmm. Or the guest of honor, and you know, they might walk off stage and there'll be a lineup of a dozen or more people waiting to meet them, and half of them want to buy them a coffee or lunch, and you know, three or four of them will have a book or a CD in hand wanting to give them a copy of their book or CD. And what you need to understand is, like, giving an influential person your book or your CD is a lot like saying to the brand new neighbor, you're going to love my kids. You're so going to enjoy babysitting them, right? It's right. premature. There's no relationship there, right? And so like we were talking about earlier, if you want to get influence, you give influence. If you want to build relationship with an influential person, offer them influence to kickstart the relationship. That's the equivalent of the apple pie when you're meeting a really influential person, right? So, you know, you might say something like, I heard you mention you're going to be talking in Cincinnati next month. You know, I happen to have a few LinkedIn connections on Cincinnati. Would you like me to send them information on your event? Or you might offer to write a book review for their book on Amazon, or maybe you could connect them with someone else who's influential. Maybe you know a reporter who might want to do a story on them. You know, maybe you know Michael Rubin and you could recommend them for his show, right?
Yes.
You know, there's all kinds of wonderful ways that you can offer to shine a light on someone else and give them influence. And I actually have another takeaway around this. Can I give your listeners another takeaway?
Again, we encourage takeaways.
And, you know, this one, I actually have this one is included with the book, Mass Influence. When you buy the book, we help you through this one in recorded modules. We have a free course that we give you with the book. But you can do this on your own if you like. And I call it the 30-day challenge. And it's this simple. For the next 30 days, gift out influence 30 times and watch what happens to your own influence. So like for the next 30 days, shout people out on Facebook or recommend them on LinkedIn, or if you've got a newsletter, mention them in your newsletter and watch what starts happening to your own influence level at the end of 30 days. I think you'll be astounded as to where you're at and what's coming back to you.
Wow. Influence is energy, and the more we channel it, the more we get, right?
Brilliant. Yeah, that I couldn't have said it better myself. Yeah.
So that is an awesome challenge. I'm actually going to try to take on that challenge myself.
I love it.
Are there any other really big mistakes that people make? The premature ask. I remember what you mentioned that the first time I met you. You were giving a talk with another friend of mine, Karen McGregor. She organized you, Colin Sprake.
Yeah, speaking at the Rock the Stage event. That's right.
Yeah,
that's
yes.
When we first met. Yeah.
And she had another. I became friends with Satien at that same talk. I wound up sitting next to him, and that was like the one of the coolest things.
I love how you're effortlessly giving influence to all these people right now. I just want to point that out and shine a light on it, right? Because Karen McGregor does awesome events with Rock the Stage in Vancouver. You know, Colin Sprake, who runs Make Your Mark Training, trains entrepreneurs actually all over North America, but his company is centered in Vancouver, so they do huge events in Vancouver. Same with Satyen Raja. Amazing international speaker, also based in Vancouver. So some really awesome people. And I love how, basically, I just want to point out, you're gifting influence in this moment, and it really is that easy when you just acknowledge people who deserve it.
Yeah, the thing about all those people that they have in common, you also have this in common, is the advice can be taken by anyone. You don't have to be building a business. You just
exactly,
have,
yeah.
It's like the
It really does apply to everyone, you know. Yeah. And I think, you know, really the biggest mistake I would see people make is what I would call practicing at business or practicing at life, you know. And it's the equivalent of, you might call it playing small, you know. Mm-hmm. And so if you catch yourself saying things like, "Someday when I'm really good at XYZ, then I'll do my big dream, you know, then I'll start that charity, then I'll go for that big promotion, then I'll really create change in my organization," or whatever it might be that your heart is really wanting you to go after, you know, and that's that inner dialogue getting in the way again, right? And, you know, if you look at the most influential people, one of the things that they all have in common is They're of high, high service to the world. They stand in really big problems, and they stand for the solution of that problem in very specific ways. You know, like, think about what it would take for a 28-year-old fresh out of Bible college to become globally iconic.
And we'll get back to that that statement in a second. Again, for station ID, you're listening to the NZRA Networks. This is the Community Living Radio. And we're live here on UBC CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
CITR has always been your ultimate wingman for when you have the ladies back at your place or whatever.
The button to let my wisdom work it out. The world is out, sending your soldier pals. The words I announce, hope you heard them like cows. Alpha, Kenny, Buddy, Roger, Charlie, and Rich. Bitch, my swag, bitches can't touch this. So click, 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 please get off my dick. Just because I know I don't make me thick.
No, and of course I'm talking about Martin Luther King Jr., right?
Right.
But he stood in the biggest problem going on the planet at the time, which was racial equality and how we treat each other with respect on this planet. But he did it in a very specific way. You know, he took on the Montgomery, Alabama bus system, you know?
Yeah.
And a lot of people forget to think about that. I mean, most people know it, but they forget to think of the significance of that, that he became globally iconic inside of a small local issue, right? And the more real and tangible, the more grassroots the issue you go after in fact, the easier it is to become influential. You know, I love that Margaret Mead quote, right? Never believe that a few caring people can't change the world, for indeed that's all that whoever will, right? It's one of my favorite quotes because it is so true inside the influence game. When you take on what's right in front of you, small, local, in your business, in your organization, in your community, whatever it might be, growing influence is faster and easier. Like, actually, there's a real-time example going on right now. Do you mind if I give you another example of that?
Sure.
You know, I'd love to tell you about Judy Van Niekerk. And Judy, I am going to predict that Judy will be huge in the next few months because, and, you know, she already is beloved and well-known in the UK and Europe as, you know, someone who is a leader in the transformational movement. And, you know, if you'd followed Judy Van Niekerk's story, she's the survivor of one of the most horrific incest stories you'll ever hear. Her father actually kept her prisoner for the first, you know, 12 to 15 years of her life. I can't remember how long. And, you know, not only did she get herself out of that situation and reported her father, but she eventually got to the place where she could forgive him. And her story has been covered all over media, all throughout, you know, UK and English-speaking Europe. And, you know, so as a leader in the empowerment movement who really invests in women and women's empowerment, one of the things that really drives Judy crazy is that women think it's okay to hurt themselves in the name of being feminine, in the name of fashion. You know, we wear shoes that hurt, we wear bras that hurt. In fact, when we look at the problem of women's bras, like a lot of leading cancer experts say they're very concerned with push-up bras and things like that as being a contributor to breast cancer. And in fact, talk to any chiropractor and they'll tell you that poorly fitting bras can cause all kinds of major back issues, right? And so here we are buying a fashion item that causes us pain, right? And I remember when Judy was first talking to me about this, she had to disrupt my thinking on it, right? Because I'm like, are you kidding me? Give up my push-up bra? No. But what Judy has created is a product called the Digital Bra. It's actually an app you can download on your smartphone. And you would, you know, women would scan their bodies in the privacy of their own home, and it's securely uploaded to the site, and you can purchase a custom ordered bra that's made to measure. How cool is that? And so they're just in the process of launching a big Kickstarter campaign around this. And I predict that this is going to go wildly viral, because Judy is firmly standing in the problem of disrupting the thinking of women, disrupting the thinking that it's okay for us to teach our daughters and teach the next generation that it's fine to hurt our bodies and hurt ourselves in the name of being sexy. Right? And change that to, no, sexy doesn't have to hurt. Sexy can be beautiful and awesome and fit properly and be great, right? But she's disrupting that thinking in a really specific way by launching a product that solves that problem. Now, in my world, that's super cool, and I would predict massive success for what Judy's doing.
It is very super cool. We had her on the show like 3 or 4 episodes ago.
Oh, fun. Yeah.
Yeah, we were talking about her product.
Shoes, Michael, I would just say I can't wait for her to do the digital shoe.
As long as the digital shoe has had some platform, some heel, you know.
It's bright red. I just got bright red.
That's right. You are a red shoe person.
I know. We share that in common. Yes. Spirit.
So, yeah. Because we're starting to run out of time here, back to your book. What is the best way people can find your book when it's released? And that's October 1st, right? It's released, is that right?
Yeah, the release date is October 1st. It's already available for pre-order on Amazon. So if you want all the information, you can just go to our book website. It's called massinfluencethebook.com. Or you can look us up on Amazon. It's called Mass Influence, The Habits of the Highly Influential. And the book actually includes the 30-day program that I mentioned earlier. If you need a little bit of help in doing your 30-day challenge, it's only $8.87 to buy the book. We priced it rock bottom because it's way more important to me that this book gets in the hands of thousands of people than I'm worried about making money on it. So, you know, take on your life and get in action is all I would say.
Great. That's awesome. Thank you again, Teresa, for enhancing my life and enhancing all of my listeners.
It's just been a pleasure, Michael. Thank you so much for having me on again. I really want to say thank you for the work you do, because your show is just so fun and really does shine a light on some great people in the world.
Yeah. So, everybody listening, I will actually put all of the information on how to get her book up on our Facebook page also. So you can just go on to Facebook and go to Community Living Radio page, and you can get the information that way also. So just to help Teresa out, because we want to get this book out there. We want to help people feel influence and give influence, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Teresa.
And that was Teresa DeGraba, and her book, Mass Influence. You can actually find it on Amazon right now. I will put more, again, even though this is a replay, I will put more details up on our Facebook page, the Community Living Radio Facebook page, to later this morning, how you can get the book. A few friends of mine have already ordered the book, and they've actually, from the book, they wind up asking Teresa to help them in consultancy with coaching and things like that. So, yeah, she's doing great work and she's having great fun with people. So, well, it looks like we have about another 10 minutes, to go here. I thought that would run us a little longer. So I'm going to try to find a, Autism Speaks, clip to finish out the rest of the show. Just bear with me a second. Hang on.
Hi, I'm Amethyst, and welcome to Ask an Autistic.
I want a renaissance to shine a light, be the change we want, set things right. We've been waiting in the dark for so long.
Autism Speaks is one of the largest and most well-known of the autism organizations in North America, and I think that they also are overseas in the UK under the name Autistica. A lot of autistic people, and some parents of autistic children, have a problem with Autism Speaks. In fact, I've never met any autistic person who supports Autism Speaks or thinks that they are a good organization. There are some parents of autistic children who say that they like Autism Speaks and who will defend it in discussions about its shortcomings. But to give them the benefit of the doubt, I feel like people who support Autism Speaks just don't know how terrible of an organization it actually is. So in this video, I'm going to outline just a few of the many reasons that Autism Speaks is awful and actually hurts autistic people rather than helps them. Firstly, for a charitable organization, Autism Speaks does a really bad job at being a charity. In 2012, only 4% of their very expansive budget went towards helping actual autistic people and their families. 4%. These numbers are from Autism Speaks' own nonprofit tax exemption form, which you can see online if you search for it. For example, in 2010, 44% of their budget went to research, 21% went to awareness and advertising, 22% went to fundraising, 5% went to administrative costs and salaries, 4% went to other, and 4% went to family services. That is money going directly to autistic people and their families to help them. Now wait, you say, research, that sounds good, right? Like we need to find a cure? Firstly, there are lots of autistic people and their loved ones who believe that autism doesn't need a cure. Secondly, you can't cure autism. Autism is a developmental disability and it's present since birth. What makes a person autistic is that their brain developed differently. Developmental disability. You can't take an autistic person and give them a cure and make them non-autistic. Autistic is their neurotype. Autistic is the way that their brain developed. And this is a controversial subject, so I'll just touch on it lightly. But the 44% of Autism Speaks budget that went to research, that research is working towards things like finding a prenatal test for autism and finding out the genetic marker or trait that causes autism. Now, this isn't research that is going to help the lives of autistic children and adults who exist now. This is research to find a prenatal test for autism. Whatever your beliefs are, you know, those are your beliefs, and that's why I'm just touching on this. But if you think that Autism Speaks research is going towards helping actual autistic people and children who exist now, helping them to live their lives and be healthier and happier autistic people, then you are sadly mistaken. To illustrate my next point of why Autism Speaks is just awful, I'm going to borrow the words of an autistic advocate, Codeman38, who posted this on dailykos.com. Imagine, if you will, that an organization existed by the name of Womanhood Speaks, which on the surface appeared to be in support of women's rights. Now imagine that the governing body of this organization only included members of the male gender, with not one female represented in its ranks. Imagine that its actual aim was to create a registry of all females and force them to become more masculine, completely disregarding the fact that a majority of females are perfectly content with their womanhood and even found it to be advantageous. Imagine that members of its leadership appeared on popular TV programs talking about the epidemic of womanhood and how it needed to be eradicated. In this example, Womanhood Speaks is Autism Speaks, and if we use this example, it becomes how clear and terrible it is that never in the history of its existence has Autism Speaks had an actual autistic person in any position of significance on their board or running it. You know, there's never been any really good autistic input because there are no autistic people present. Now, there was one autistic person who, up until recently, worked with Autism Speaks, but really in a very superficial role. Really, he was just here we have an autistic person working with us now. You know, one autistic person. Good try, Autism Speaks. But he actually resigned. His name was John Elder Robinson, and he resigned November 13th, 2013, in an open letter online. He said that he couldn't defend Autism Speaks anymore because of the hateful message that they were putting out. Now, the straw that broke the proverbial camel's back for John Elder Robinson was Autism Speaks to Washington, A Call to Action. In this article, written by Suzanne Wright, autistic people are dehumanized, vilified, and made out to be burdens on society. Autism is compared to an epidemic, and quite frankly, the negativity is astounding. And really, it woke up quite a few people who previously had only seen the surface of Autism Speaks and thought they were a good organization. And there was a bit of a snowball effect on the internet for a while after this call to action article went out. People were just horrified that their children were being dehumanized and othered in this way. And so, yeah, I understand why John Elder Robinson could no longer defend Autism Speaks, and he resigned. The fact that there are so many autistic voices being raised in protest against Autism Speaks says something. I mean, their name is Autism Speaks. They don't have any autistic people speaking. And that brings me to my last point of why Autism Speaks is terrible. And this is harder to quantify, but, you know, it's the most important point, and it's how Autism Speaks raises funds. They present autism in an inaccurate way, purposely, to raise money. They use words like epidemic, crisis, battle. They paint a horrific picture, and the reason that they're doing this, the reason that they're fear-mongering, is to raise money. And you might say, you know, so what? They're raising money. So what if they use a negative message? It's for a good cause. Except that only 3-4% of their budget actually goes to the families of autistic people. The biggest chunk of it goes to research to try to prevent autistic people from ever being born. Not only are they not helping autistic people with the funds that they raise, they are actively hurting us by spreading this message of fear and ignorance and hate. And there are so many amazing, you know, severely autistic and nonverbal self-advocates there, like Amanda Beggs and Amy Sequenza. And Autism Speaks doesn't want you to hear about them. Because if you're hearing a message of hope and acceptance and neurodiversity, and that just because your child won't be living a normal life doesn't mean that it won't be a good life, that's not raising money for Autism Speaks. Autism Speaks profits by keeping parents ignorant and by working on fear and pity to bring cash in from the general uneducated public. And frankly, it needs to stop.
Now, I played that because Amethyst has a really good message that if we're going to develop a nonprofit that says that we're going to help people, then let's help people. And let's not develop a nonprofit that dehumanizes people. I'm not really speaking against Autism Speaks because they do some good work when they index resources and everything that helps families get help, get respite, things like that that they need so that the family unit can move forward. When you consider that they develop research to find ways to eliminate what a group of people, maybe that's not so great. Just some things to think about. Have a good day, and we will see you tomorrow on CFRO when we have our live half-hour show tomorrow at 2 o'clock. So see you tomorrow. Freak down. I'm so tangy, people call me my tangy. God is a web.
bitches, I'ma keep it banging. Truth is like a rotten tooth, you gotta spit it out. Left the bottom two, let my wisdom work it out. Big on the underground, can't knock me down. Look at these bitches, bad fired up demand. I sleep on my tongue and then I stand by it too. I could say lots with the little words if you like. Adam, had them, yeah, me, the madam. Yeah, I'll introduce you to the dooms and dooms. Come let me go, do you like my perfume? Made it at home with some gasoline and shrooms. Oil and water are two extremes. Bring that fucking car, face you like fucking booms. Why is your tattoo smuggly looking thing? I got many designs, I'm nodding on bang. My cousin's got his busy, yes, he's decorating. He's windy, you might need him when I finish what I'm saying. Let's be frank, understand, understand. I don't care what you smell, what you fucking drank. I love to be pissed and make silly yanks, cause it's not me and you, it's a fucking bank.